I am delighted to have you all here. We've got some here that were not here last week. Got a neighbor, two neighbors now coming, and we're glad to have them here. It's good to have Alma Ruth back from the north, I guess. She's been up there. Okay. So it's good to see you. We will be on page 17 today. I know you wanted to study Revelation, but we've got some groundwork to lay first. I have a couple of reasons for doing this study on Islam. One of them is that so you will understand what's going on in the Middle East. It's hard to straighten everything out, and I think you'll understand better once we've done this study today. And the second is that I think you will understand the book of Revelation better by understanding what the Islamic people believe, because I can see how that fits, their beliefs fit into end time prophecies. So at least we'll have some correlation there. Next week we will go to Daniel 2, and we'll be in Daniel for about 5 weeks, putting some historical background to Revelation, and then we will start Revelation and cover all 22 chapters. So don't worry, we're going to get there. All right. We start with our glossary on page 17. This is a definition of terms. Islam itself means a voluntary submission to God, although I question that voluntary in light of what's going on around the world. A Muslim is a one who is an adherent of Islam. We used to call them Muslims, and now we call them Muslims. And it means a submissive one, or one who is submitted to Allah. It's divided into two sects, the Sunnis, who are the liberals and the more moderate ones, and the Shiites, who are the militant fundamentalists. The Shiites are located mainly in Iraq, and the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia. And the Shiites make up about 73% of all Muslims. And there is another mistake right there. Scratch out which number over 5 million adherents and put 1.5 billion. I don't know where that number came from. Sometimes I wonder what I'm doing. But we have 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. And I hope that's right. I'm not absolutely sure. When you get material from a lot of different resources, you get a lot of different answers sometimes. But that's probably closer than 500 million. Allah is the Muslim God. Somebody say something? Okay, he is not Yahweh. He is not the God we worship. They will tell you that he is, but he is not. We do not worship the same God. The Allah that they worship has no human traits, no love, no grace, no forgiveness. No human traits at all. Muhammad was the one who started the religion of Islam. His name means one who is praised. He claims he restored the true religion. He took what Christianity and Judaism had corrupted and restored it to its true form. And they believe that our Bible and our religion is corrupted and theirs is right. He was one of the last prophets. He was the last prophet sent from Allah, and therefore he is superior to Jesus. He was a young man, excuse me, as a spiritual leader of his tribe. Way back in the 600s, a lot of... All the tribes had a lot of different gods, 124,000 gods, but he was a spiritual leader for his tribe, and he was a very spiritual man, and he would go to a cave to pray and to worship, and he came to the conclusion that the moon god was the superior god, and so he adopted the moon god and developed his own religion by combining a lot of the other beliefs about the other gods into his religion, which he called Islam. What was happening to him, he would go to the cave and spiritual beings would appear to him, and they terrified him. Some people call them fits or seizures that he would have, but he would have these beings that would come to him and tell him things, and it scared him. He wasn't sure what was happening. He would come home absolutely drained and shaking and just a nervous wreck. But he finally decided that the spiritual beings were Gabriel, and that Gabriel was bringing revelation, new revelation from God to him. And that's when he started collecting and forming his religion.
So he was possibly schizophrenic.
That would be one way of saying it. Demonized would also be one way of saying it. I am not convinced that it was Gabriel who was appearing to him. It was someone else. Bitsy?
So Muhammad is a descendant of Ishmael?
They claim to be, but I don't know for sure. That's a question I did not come across. But they do claim to be a descendant of Ishmael. The Arabs do, the other son of Abraham. Okay. We will talk quite a bit about the Al-Mahdi. That is what we would consider the Muslim Antichrist. His name means the guided one. And he is also called the 12th Imam. They are waiting for his appearance. He is not mentioned in the Quran, but in later traditions. He's supposed to be the last one who will come and make things right. And we would attribute what they attribute to Al-Mahdi, we would attribute to Messiah. They call Jesus Isa, I-S-A. And that is the Muslim term for our Jesus. He's considered a great prophet, but not divine. They will not accept the divinity. They do teach that he will return to earth as the Mahdi's assistants and forcibly convert Jews and Christians to Islam. So they are waiting for the 12th Imam to come back. If you remember, the former president of Iran claimed to have met with the 12th Imam in a well, I think it was, and talked with him. And at the time this was published several years ago, I thought the man's crazy. But now I understand he's just a devout Muslim and who is following his beliefs. The next term is Al-Dajjal, and the best I can figure out, the A-L in front of something means the, so we could call him the Dajjal. He is the deceiver or the false Messiah. We would consider him Antichrist, and that would be a term that maybe they might apply to him. He is the evil figure in Islam. Now, there are three holy books. The first one is the Quran, also spelled K-O-R-A-N. It means the recitation or the revelation. It's their Bible. It's considered to be the literal words of God and the only words of God protected from corruption. It was revealed to Muhammad by Gabriel. And when we say chapter 4, verse 15, they would say Surah 4, 15. And many times you'll see a quote that they are using to verify what they're doing, and it'll say Surah chapter so-and-so, and that's out of the Quran. Uh-huh.
Did he actually write everything down, or did he tell somebody?
He told somebody. He was illiterate. But he had scribes and students who wrote for him. He actually could not write himself, according to what I've read. The Hadith is the collection of his sayings. His students would gather around him and write down what he said. So that's more or less the traditions, the things that dealt with the moral aspects of Islam. And then the Sunnah, which means a clean, well-trodden path. Those are the accounts of his daily practices and things that he did. But it is all three of these are equal in authority to a Muslim. These are their three holy books. A caliph is a ruler of Allah on earth, a vice regent, in other words. He is the successor of Muhammad. He is the leader of all Muslims. And it's a capital offense to defy his authority. A caliphate is control of the world by Islam, or it is a political entity. It may not control the whole world, but it is a political entity that is controlled by Islam.
Lynette, you're hearing those words now associated with ISIS.
Yes, in June of this year, the most militant form of Al-Qaeda proclaimed a caliphate and elected a caliph. And this is what they're working toward. ISIS means the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. This is where they're working mostly. They really now prefer the term, they've kind of wavered on what they wanted to be called. They prefer the term the Islamic State. So they are working toward establishing this caliph, this caliphate all over the world. And they're starting in Syria and Iraq, and they are incredibly vicious. So vicious that Egypt and the Saudis have denounced them. They're worse than Al-Qaeda ever was. When I wrote this particular study, it was back in January and February, and I had never heard of ISIS, and all of a sudden, it's come. It's here. It's facing us.
What does it mean when, like, the president calls it ISIL? What's the difference?
ISIL?
I don't know.
Okay, that was one of the first names they started with. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T, which refers to that strip of geography there where Syria and Lebanon are located. Okay?
Did you hear the president's address last night?
No, it was a choir practice.
Oh, that's right. Well, I was home. Anyway, he made the statement that ISIS was not, did he say, was not, these terrorists are not Muslims because no Muslim would, you know, murder and kill like they are. Now, and that's what was so confusing to me.
Okay. He's wrong.
I mean, but a lot of people say that, you know, that Muslims are really peaceful.
Okay, let me skip ahead. Let me skip ahead and tell you that it is commanded in the Quran to lie about your beliefs. Yeah, it said if you read your material, you found out that it is commanded to lie for the benefit of Islam. They will tell you if you go to an Islamic website, it sounds so beautiful, so sweet and full of life. But it is not, because what these people are doing is merely carrying out what the Quran commands. And I promise you, it commands them to kill every infidel they find when they are in power and can do it. Okay? It is the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Okay? The Imam is simply their local worship leader. The Ayatollah is a slightly higher worship leader. Hajj is the pilgrimage to Mecca. You remember seeing on television all of them gathered around that black box. This is what every Muslim should do. There is a tax on every non-Muslim who is under Sharia law. If you were living in Saudi Arabia today, you would either have the opportunity to pay the tax, convert to Islam, or be beheaded. So that's your choices. Sharia is Muslim law.
Is paying the tax just a slight delay?
It's protection money is what it is. And I don't know that it guarantees your protection. When they get in power, the key is power. They have to have enough people to be able to get away with what they're doing.
How is it possible that we allow Sharia courts or Sharia law to be used at courts here in the United States?
Amen.
Because of our corrupt judges.
All right. We also have them in Britain, as you know.
When
they get to a place where they are large enough, have a large enough majority, then they can pressure the government into doing things. I told you, in Britain, Sharia law courts are accepted by the Chief Justice and the head of the church over there. It's just a process of gaining a majority. As long as they are a minority, they will be peaceful. But the more there are of them, the more violent they will become. It's a step. As long as your population is around 2% or less, you pretty much can coexist with them peacefully. But when it begins to grow to 2 to 5%, then they begin the attacks. And the more Muslims there are, the more they can do. And we may go over that if we have some time. Betsy?
I read a statistic that said that by 2025, Great Britain will have a majority Muslim population. Their birth rate is much higher than...
Their birth rate is higher. Each family has 8 to 10 children. And when you're born a Muslim, you stay a Muslim, except for very rare occasions. All right, jihad is the holy war. It is the struggle for Islam's total world dominion. And it is a basic requirement of all Muslims everywhere. You are to struggle intellectually, politically, and militarily, if necessary, to convert all Christians and all Jews. It's interesting to me that they aren't real interested in Hindus or Buddhists. It's Christians and Jews that they are fighting. The kithman is the command to deliberately conceal your beliefs when you're in danger. And the Quran actually states that Allah is the greatest liar. Lying is fine as long as you're protecting Islam, and Allah is the greatest liar. Some God.
Somebody's the liar and the father of lies.
That you think they're related? All right, you are a kafir. You're an infidel because you do not follow Islam. Let's see, shirk is the greatest sin. Attributing divinity to Jesus is shirk. A fatwa you probably know by now. It's a religious ruling. Allah is the greatest. Allahu Akbar. You will hear them shout this many times as they are beheading people and in the streets. They carry a black flag. If you'll notice on television, they carry a black flag, and on it is written, "There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger." A twelver is one who believes in the 12th Imam who is coming. And a martyr is someone who kills others, viewed as enemies of the faith, and in the process gets himself killed. Where we talked last week, a Christian martyr is someone who witnesses to the truth of Christ and dies for it. Islam is not just a religion, it is a 100% way of life. We should be ashamed at how devoted they are to following their religion compared to how we follow ours. Now,
they don't have separation of church and state.
No, there's no separation of church and state. There is no freedom of religion. I mean, you either follow Islam or you pay a penalty for doing so. Right now, there are about 80,000 ISIS fighters. And remember, they are so violent that Al-Qaeda disowned them, actually distanced themselves from this group of people. They started in 1999, and by now we have 80,000 of them fighting, and they are fighting other Muslims. It's nothing to them to kill another Muslim if the Muslim doesn't believe what you believe. Let's see. I wanted to mention to you Joel Rosenberg's book. I got an email this morning saying that Joel Rosenberg's his next book will come out in January, and it is on ISIS. Joel is an American Jew who is a Christian who ministers to Muslims and to Arabs and Jews in that area. He is, in fact, moving his family over there. His doctrine is very solid. He's very, very godly man, ministering both to the Muslims. And I want to say right now that we are not to hate the Muslims. We can hate their doctrine if we want to, but we are to love them. God loves them. They are his people. We are to take the message of Christ to them as best we possibly can. And I'm not saying that every Muslim on your street is out to get you. You know, we've got Christians who don't obey everything in the Bible, and they have Muslims who don't obey everything in the Quran. The problem is that we have so many young Islamic men in America, and we don't know which ones are out to kill us and which ones are not. We have 200 American-born Muslims who have gone to fight with ISIS, and they will come back once they've been trained. And they will come back to America, and we have no way of stopping them since they are American citizens. So we've got to be aware of the danger. On the other hand, we've got to trust God to take care of us too.
What bothers me is that on page 19, down number 10, the Quran commands the killing of non-Muslims. If they claim to be Muslim, how can they not follow this? How can our neighbor be a Muslim, a true Muslim, and not want us dead?
What am I missing?
It commands the killing of all non-Muslims.
Yes, on page 19.
Right.
The beliefs of Islam.
I couldn't understand the question.
If they're true Muslims and they believe the Quran, how do they not believe this and not want their...
Why are they not killing us? Okay, that your question is, why are they not killing us now? Okay, gotcha. Sorry. The reason they're not killing us now is that they can't get away with it here. It's a matter of the majority. Let me turn to a page that's not in your book and just read to you. It's called Islamization, when they start changing society, and it occurs when there are sufficient Muslims in a country to start agitating for religious freedom, their own religious freedom. At 2 to 5%, they begin to proselytize from gangs and jails, the disaffected members. From 5% on, they exercise a large influence, larger in proportion than what you would think 5% of the population could exercise. And they will begin to insist on what the Jews would call kosher food in the supermarkets, and begin to buy just violent acts, car burnings. We've had those in France and Amsterdam. As the population grows, they can begin to be more terroristic. In Britain and in most other countries of Europe today, they live together in groups. They don't spread out and assimilate, so they live together in groups. And with in those groups, they have a lot of power. They can push people into making them do what they want to do. It's a kind of a form of blackmail. You accept us and what we want, or we will burn your car, or we will burn down your synagogue, we will burn your church. When they get to 10%, you have uprisings and threats. After 20%, there's rioting, jihad, the burning of Christian churches and synagogues. At 40%, we've got massacres, terror attacks, such as we had in Bosnia.
Lynette, could I just say something in Elizabeth's question?
Yeah.
Our ministry has a ministry to Muslims in Dallas, and we're meeting a lot of Muslims who are cultural Muslims, which means that they really don't understand or follow the Quran, and the cultural Muslims do not adhere to the killing of non-Muslims.
All right, good.
So that's an encouragement.
That's good to know.
The gospel and really want to know about this visa.
Very good. So, that's great.
What keeps them safe?
What keeps them safe, she's asking.
Nothing. In Dallas especially, which I'm talking about, there are not that many radical. We really haven't come across any radical Muslims. They're pretty much cultural. They come here because they want the safety. They want the improvement of life that America can afford. And they really just want peace.
Okay.
They're really not into the radical part.
Very good.
But they're not accepting Muslims because they've accepted Jesus and are open to Jesus.
Yeah. What part of Dallas?
All over Dallas.
All over.
Dallas has the second largest multi-ethnic communities in the United States.
Yeah, they had the first mosque, didn't they?
And it's right across the street from our ministry.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
I have two things. My daughter and son-in-law go to a church in Houston, and they're doing the same thing down there. In fact, one of their associate pastors was gone and had that up. Mm-hmm. So they are doing it in larger cities. The second thing is, you were talking about the Muslims that are fighting with ISIS right now being able to come back. There are two bills, and Ted Cruz is sponsoring one in the Senate, that will take away their American citizenship and their passports, so they hopefully cannot get back in this country.
Okay, good.
You know how that'll work.
Yeah. All right.
They are trying to do something about that.
Good. That's good to know.
I guess they're not.
I'm talking about Joel Rosenberg. You know, his last book was called The 12 People.
Uh-huh.
And in it, he talks about the Muslim people having Jesus Christ coming to them in visions.
Yes.
And dreams. And if you take Voice of the Martyrs, they have related some of those actual stories that, you know, Muslims have been converted because Jesus came to them in a dream.
A part of the good news is that in Africa, 6 million Muslims convert to Christianity every year. So that's the good news. That's the only way we'll ever defeat is for them to come to Christ.
Lynette?
Yes.
One more thing. We're praying for a Muslim right now because he spoke to one of our ministry people, and he asked that we would pray that he would receive a dream.
Okay.
So that they expect that.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. I have here that Muslims make up 22% of the world's population. That 1.5 billion. Okay. Back to page 19. Islam teaches that Muhammad was sinless because Gabriel had performed surgery and squeezed all the sin out of Muhammad's heart. Wouldn't that be great if that could happen? Now, he was not only poorly educated, not only illiterate, he was a polygamist. He had many wives. He was a pedophile. He married young girls, and he was a murderer. He killed many people, hundreds of people, but they believe he was sinless. Their goal is the total dominion of Islam throughout the world. The Quran pronounces a curse on those who believe Jesus is God. They say God doesn't need a son to come and do his work. He doesn't have equals. So just believing in Jesus is a great sin to a devout Muslim. What hurts me is that on top of Mount Moriah, in the Dome of the Rock, is the bedrock top of the mountain. That rock that's under the dome is the bedrock. The Muslims believe that that's where Adam sacrificed and where Abraham was prepared to sacrifice Isaac, and many other people sacrificed. In that rock is incised a rectangle about like this, and the Jews believe that the Ark of the Covenant rested on that rock, that was what held the Ark of the Covenant. When the Muslims conquered Jerusalem in the 600s, they immediately put the Dome of the Rock, or a mosque-like feature, over the rock. That is their way of saying, this is our ground, we have conquered it. It belongs to us. Inside the Dome of the Rock, we have inscribed, far be it from God that he should have a son. So right there where Jesus, very near where Jesus was crucified, are the words, far be it from God that he should have a son. They place a mosque anywhere they have conquered the land, and they claim it for themselves. And now you understand why they wanted to put a mosque at ground zero. They are claiming ground zero for themselves.
I just read something, and I'm sorry, I don't remember where I read it. It was just this week, it might have been something associated with this, that there are now nearly, I think they said 18 mosques in Southwest Houston.
Okay. Quite a few. They are, they do not believe that Jesus died on the cross to pay for people's sins. They believe that Allah took him to heaven alive and that he's going to come back. They are virulently anti-Semitic. The officially appointed imam of the Palestinian Authority, that's right there near Israel, claims that the resurrection of the dead will not arise until you will fight the Jews and kill them. So they cannot be resurrected until they kill all the Jews. It's interesting that in 1910 they issued a fatwa commanding the beheading of infidels. I thought beheading went out with the guillotine, but it's come back. And in the book of Revelation, you will see that the Antichrist kills people by beheading him. Isn't it strange that this ancient method has been revived in our lifetime? In Revelation, or what?
What's the verse in chapter?
In Revelation?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. We'll get there.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay, we've talked about the fact that they are commanded to lie to Jews and Christians, that there's no forgiveness. I think that the Islam and prophecy Islamic prophecy is the flip side of our prophecy. And here's some quotes from Joel Richardson. Number two, under Islam and prophecy, I believe that Islam is indeed the primary vehicle that will be used by Satan to fulfill the prophecies of the Bible about the future political, religious, military system of the Antichrist that will overwhelm the entire world just prior to the promised coming of Christ. Now, Joel Richardson is the one I'm quoting from here. He's written a couple of books. I cannot find out anything about the man, and I cannot validate anything I've taken from him. He writes under a pseudonym. He says he's had too many threats, and so he writes under a pseudonym, and I cannot find out anything. So I want you to take everything I say with a grain of salt. You'll have to get it confirmed elsewhere. I'm doing the best I can, but the subject is massive, and we don't have a lot of time. But I'm doing the best I can to filter out the truth of it. The thing that really strikes me is the awaited Messiah, or what we would call Messiah. They call him the 12th Imam on 21. He's going to come back and rule just before the end of the world, and he will restore pure Islamic religion and pure justice. He will be believed to be the ultimate savior of mankind, and he will work with Isa, or Jesus Christ. He is the final caliph, and they are working and calling for the caliphate. Did I hear a question? Okay. I know you've read all this, but we're still going to go over it briefly. The main goal of the Mahdi will be to establish the Islamic State and Sharia law all over the world. His final battle will start in Iran. He will join the army of Muslim warriors carrying black flags and lead the army to Israel and reconquer it and set up its rule in Jerusalem. If you are familiar with 1 Thessalonians 4, does that ring a bell?
Yes.
Yes, the Antichrist will set up his throne in the temple of God in Jerusalem. So it's just odd how closely related and yet flipped are their end time beliefs. The Mahdi, they say, will come back on a white horse, and they actually quote Revelation 6:2, which we believe speaks of Antichrist, and apply it to a Mahdi. He's going to find the Ark of the Covenant and some more Bible scrolls. He will change the law by instituting Sharia law all over the earth. In Daniel, we will find a passage that says the Antichrist seeks to change the times and the laws. I never understood that until now. Laws, I understand. I mean, anybody wants to change laws. But change the times, I didn't know what they were talking about. But Islam has its own calendar based on the life of Muhammad. And so if this Mahdi comes back and sets up rule all over the world, he's going to make people conform to the Islamic calendar rather than our calendar, the Christian calendar, based on the life of Christ. So that this just knowing that helped me understand a passage in Daniel. Next page, Islam's Dajjal. This is the bad guy as far as Islam is concerned. They would call him the Antichrist. He's a Muslim Antichrist. This is the bad guy that's going to come and fight at the very end of time. He will be Jewish. He'll be called the Jewish king, and most of his army will be Jewish. He will claim to be divine and will claim to be Jesus Christ. So you can see right now that they are putting a bad connotation on what Jesus is going to do. When Jesus comes back, he's going to be claimed to be Jesus. They're going to say he's the bad guy. He will be blind in one eye. I don't know what that has to do with anything. But he will have the word infidel written across his face so that true Muslims can identify him as the bad guy.
He says he's got one eye,
but then it's between his eyes. He's blind in one eye. The evil eye?
You know, he wears his jewelry.
Okay. You can be safe from this bad guy if you go to Mecca, Medina, and Damascus. Apparently, he's not allowed to get into those cities. So as a Muslim, you can go there. And you can also be safe if you memorize 10 verses of a particular surah from the Quran. They'll be protecting you. Issa, which is their name for Jesus, will kill the Dajjal and his followers. Here's a quote from a Muslim scholar. The army of Satan will be led by a person who will claim to be Jesus Christ himself. The Muslims will call him the Dajjal or the deceiver. The Muslim Jesus army will fight Dajjal's army and defeat him. The Empire of Israel will fall and the religion of Islam will prevail. So what is predicted of Christ in Revelation is predicted of the Dajjal in Islam. It's hard for me to keep these guys straight.
Okay. You're saying that they actually believe that Isa, A-S-A, the Muslim Jesus, will kill the Dajjal as his father and his followers?
Let's see, is that what I said? I guess so. They're going to kill, the bad guy is Dajjal. And Issa will kill Dajjal.
So they believe that.
That's what they believe. I hope I didn't get that wrong.
That's interesting that they actually believe their end will be
the Muslim Jesus army will fight Dajjal's army and defeat him, and Israel will fall. Remember, Dajjal's going to be a Jew, so he's going to come back. Jesus is going to help the Mahdi kill Jews. Not our version of Jesus, their version, Issa. See, that's why I get confused, and it's very, the Muslim Issa. You know, when Rick Warren equated Issa and Jesus, he got in a lot of trouble. And that's because the Issa, the Jesus of the of Islam, is not our Jesus any more than Allah is not our God. Jesus is, in their opinion, Jesus, they believe he's a prophet, he's coming back, he's going to kill Christians and Jews and tell us that we were mistaken in believing in Jesus. And etc. I had a hand over here.
I think it helped last two things. I think it helped last week when you just described this as a mirror, the dark side of Christianity. So it's like you have to flip everything.
Yeah.
So you think about a Muslim Jesus and how they're going into this point of division between Jews and Christians. They're using the Muslim Jesus to attack the Jews.
Right. All right.
And it starts in the Garden of Eden with the first story.
Okay, the very first story. I'm going to repeat this for the recording. Okay. They do not have the story of the fall of man in the garden. Therefore, there's no sin. Therefore, there's no need for a Savior. It all starts in Genesis. Bitsy? Okay. All right. Let's look at page 23. They do not believe that Jesus died on the cross to pay for sins. They don't believe there was any necessity for salvation. They believe that he went to heaven where he's been living with Allah and that he's going to come back to the earth and finish his ministry when he does. He's not a savior. He's just another prophet. He will tell the world he did not die, that he is not God or the Son of God. Now, this is what they believe that Jesus Christ will do. He's Allah's slave and messenger. He will utter judgment on any Christians or Jews who believe in him as God. He defers to the Mahdi. In other words, he submits to the supreme ruler of Islam. His primary purpose will be to oversee the institution and enforcement of Sharia law all over the world. He comes to abolish Christianity entirely. He will remove all crosses and churches and replace them with the crescent moon of Islam. I told you that Muhammad believed that the moon god was the superior god, and that accounts for the moon as a symbol. I could not find where the five-point star comes from. Nobody seems to know, but it's there on their symbols. One of Jesus' jobs is to kill the Dajjal, the Muslim version of the Antichrist, and all of Dajjal's followers, most of whom will be Jews. This is a quote from a man in America. Like all prophets, Prophet Jesus came with the divine message of surrender to God Almighty, which is Islam. He will personally correct the misrepresentations and the misinterpretations about himself, and he will deny that he ever claimed to be the Son of God. This is what they think Jesus will do when he comes back.
Would it be easier, I was reading this along with you, it made it easier for me if instead of saying E on all of these, I put our Jesus or the Christian Jesus?
That would probably help. Like I say, it really does get confusing, and I get confused myself when I'm going through here. Just think of it like Karen said, little bit, I think about her being little bit, as being a mirror, just a mirror image. What they see as good is what we see as bad. We see Messiah as good. They think our Messiah will be evil. And as I said, one of the reasons I included this is because you can understand Revelation better when you know this. And I've put some comparisons between what the Bible teaches about end times and what Islam teaches about end times in here. One of them, I don't think I'll go through all of them, but look down about the fourth paragraph. The false prophet is described as a dragon in lamb's clothing. Issa comes bearing the name, the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ, and yet he comes to murder all those who do not submit to Islam. The Antichrist is said to change the times. I explained that. They will change the world's worship day from Sunday or Saturday to Friday. That is their holy day. If you go to Jerusalem and walk down that shopping street, you'll see on one side on Friday all the shops are closed. On this side, they're all open. On Saturday, all the shops on this side are closed because they're Jewish. And on this side, all the Muslim shops are open. So you got to go in the middle of the week if you want to shop all the shops. His face is said to glow. That's on the next page. About half, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 paragraphs down. The spirit of Antichrist specifically denies the Trinity, the Incarnation, and the substitutionary death of Jesus on the cross, and Islam specifically denies all these Christian doctrines. Jesus and Paul warned Christians against the deceit and deception in the last days. Islam is the only religion on earth that practices deceit as a specific tool to achieve its desired end. It's interesting that the specific nations pictured in the Bible are as part of the final empire of the Antichrist are all Islamic nations. Do we have any comments or questions now?
Do they have anything that we would deem as a missionary?
Do they have missionaries? It's active recruitment to Islam, yes, particularly in prisons. That's where they find a lot of them. I gave you some statistics about after 9/11, how many people converted from America in here somewhere. 80% of the converts to Islam in America came out of Christian homes, but they were just disaffected with America. What? 27? Yeah, number six. Every year, tens of thousands of Americans convert to Islam. This quadrupled after 9/11. I did not realize until this morning that I would be teaching this lesson on 9/11. Odd. Over 80% of them were reared in Christian homes. In as little as 15 years, we may be wondering why we are in the minority and the Muslims are in the majority. They speak quite freely of establishing an independent Islamic state not subject to British law. Already in England, they're turning one little city into an Islamic state, and they will not obey the laws of Israel, Britain will not submit themselves to the laws of Britain. No. I mean, what can you do if you promise freedom of religion to people? I don't know that there's anything we can do to stop the spread, except mission efforts.
I'm kind of curious. If I was Muslim and I wanted to help destroy Christians, I would certainly support abortion.
Okay. All right. She said, if I were a Muslim and I wanted to destroy Christians, I would support abortion.
For Christians?
For Christians, yeah, not for Muslims. By the way, do you know that we have two devout Muslims who have been appointed to important posts in the Department of Homeland Security? We have the fox guarding the hen house already. Okay.
It's out there now. It's on tape.
It's on tape. I'm not going to say it.
But he's a deceiver.
He is a deceiver. Yes.
Did you know that there is a mosque at Fort Sam Houston, Army Base in Houston? I mean, in San Antonio?
Okay. They are demanding, when they reach this critical mass, so to speak, they demand such privileges as that. I remember reading several years ago that airports were having to put in water fountains down low so that they could wash their feet before praying when they happened to be taking a flight. And they will, on the airplane, demand the right to wash their feet and pray toward Mecca, etc. On the next page, I have one entitled Rome or Islamic Caliphate. And we're going to talk about that when we get to Daniel 2. You'll understand more about it when I get there. That was page 26. Yeah, you might, if you want to, just kind of study that again for next week and compare it to what Daniel is teaching. The belief is that the Islamic Caliphate will be headquartered in Turkey. Turkey was always a very pure form of religion. The original Ottoman Empire, which was Muslim, was a caliphate. It was there in Turkey. All the sacred sites, I'll just put sacred, but you should, number four under that, put sites in there. Back in 2006, one Islamic scholar predicted that the Turkish Islamic Union would be founded in the next 10 to 20 years. So that would be 2016 to 2026. They believe they're going to have an Islamic state headquartered in Turkey. On the next page, we have a revived Islamic caliphate. I'm going to skip that one because I want to talk about it when we get to Ezekiel 38 and 39. That'll be quite a long ways down the line. If you're familiar with Christian prophecy, you can understand what's here, but we will discuss it more in detail later. I will say that one night Dr. Reed talked a little bit about Islam in his sermon, and as soon as the final prayer was prayed, Vision America Rick Scarborough stood up and said, "People, please be careful about what you repeat about what Dr. Reed has said today." Somebody who knows what's going on implied that it was dangerous to repeat what Dr. Reed had said about Islam. We don't know who our enemies are. They are here among us. And the Muslim living next door to you may be a wonderful person, a cultural Muslim who does not agree with this. And there are a lot of different opinions in Islam about some of these things. But all I can say is that we need to be a little careful, and we need to trust God to take care of us, and we need to evangelize every Muslim we meet. We must remember they are loved by God.
But there goes our freedom of speech and our freedom of religion.
Pardon?
There goes our freedom of speech and our freedom of religion if we can't.
If we can't speak to them.
It was on the news the other day that they were going on college campuses, and they interviewed somebody about, what do you think of ISIS? I said, what is that? So the news is, we're ignorant.
Right. We're there. Can a Muslim be a good American? It's a question for you. Theologically, no, he cannot, because his allegiance is not to America, it is to Allah. Can he be? Religiously, no, because no other religion is accepted by Allah, accepted by his Allah, except Islam. No, he can't be scripturally because his allegiance is to the Quran and the five pillars of Islam. Geographically, no, because his allegiance is to Mecca, not to Washington. Socially, no, because his allegiance to Islam forbids him to make friends with Christians or Jews.
Are you reading out of our lesson?
No, I'm sorry. This is a different page that's not in your book. I just found this a couple of days ago. Sorry. This is the opinion of a man who worked in Saudi Arabia for 20 years. And he was asked the question, can a good Muslim be a good American? Can he be a good one politically? No, because he has to submit to the mullahs and the imams. And they teach the annihilation of America. So there he go. Domestically, no, he can't even be a good American there because he's commanded to marry four wives, which is against our laws, and he's commanded to beat them if they do not submit to him, which would get him in trouble with the police.
Lynette, are those laws in the Quran?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is commanded to marry four wives.
I got that brief email the other day.
Okay, that's where I got it then. It came by email. Can he be a good American intellectually? No, because he can't accept the American Constitution. It's based on biblical principles. Can he be one philosophically? No, because Islam does not allow freedom of religion and expression. Democracy and Islam cannot coexist. Every Muslim government is dictatorial. There's no such thing as democracy. That's why we had so much trouble in Iraq trying to set up a democratic government. Nobody knew how to run a democratic government because they had no concept of it. Other questions and comments now? It's your turn.
I have a question about Joel Richardson. And the pseudonym, is Joel Richardson the pseudonym?
Yes. Yes, Joel Richardson is just a pseudonym. We do not know his real name.
But you got Joel Rosenberg on one side, and we're not sure about Joel Richardson.
Right. I'm confident that what Joel Rosenberg writes is solid.
Yeah. Okay, so Joel Rosenberg is different from Joel Richardson.
That's what's getting, yes.
Two different people.
Okay, and you can find Joel Rosenberg's books in the public library. He writes nonfiction and fiction, and he's very good.
And is he the one who's moving to Italy?
He's the one. He is the Jew. His mother was a Gentile American. His daddy was a Jewish American, and he is a Christian, and he is moving to Israel and taking his four sons and wives with him in order to minister to the Muslims and the Jews. Bless him. Pray for him. Yeah, he should be already there. He left a week or so ago. Some of you are very well versed in this, and I appreciate your comments. Other comments or questions?
I have a question about our reading for next week on September 18. It says pages 38 through 40. Is that a miss? Should it be 30? Pick up with page 30 through 40?
No. No, we're going to study Daniel. Which the study of Daniel 2 starts on 38 and 39 and 40. That's your homework, your written homework.
But we need to read everything in between before we get there.
No.
So we're not reading the possible order of defense?
You don't have to. You can if you want to.
Well, you worked at it.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Okay, see, what I did was put the extra pages. Extra material comes before the study of Daniel. All that stuff about the chronology of the end times, all of that's extra material. And if you notice on September the 18th, I have you do pages 38 to 40 and then study the kingdoms of the world chart. You will go back to your table of contents, find the kingdoms of this world chart, which happens to be before Daniel on page 36, and you will study that in connection with Daniel 2. Did I say it? Reread 28?
Page 28 is about
Daniel. Oh. Oh, yeah. If you want to, go back and look at page 26.
Reread it.
Yeah, reread it as you are studying Daniel 2 because it applies to Daniel 2. Okay. No, but almost. Is Baghdad and Babylon the same? Ancient Babylon is about, again, I get different figures, between 20 and 50 miles away from today's Baghdad. So it's very close. It's very close. But not quite the same. It was in ruins for many centuries, and Saddam Hussein was rebuilding it as a monument to himself, ancient Babylon. All right.
It was not to be rebuilt.
That's after it's destroyed at the end time. It's going to be rebuilt and then destroyed.
I have a recommendation just based on this thing that I read about the majority Muslim population in the UK. My family, we're a descendant of royalty.
Right.
I'd love to go and see the old churches where my family lies in effigy. All that will be destroyed.
Yes.
Muslim rule will all be destroyed. So if you ever want to see them,
go now. See the churches of Britain.
The churches of Britain will be destroyed.
This is just my opinion, but I think our children will see the end of the monarchy in Britain.
Poor baby
he won't get to ruling. He's so cute. He's such a precious baby. Okay, I want to reiterate what I said last week. You have an enormous amount of material in here. I don't expect you to retain it all. There won't be a final. If you don't understand it, just hang in there. We'll get there and try to answer all of your questions that can be answered. But bear in mind that prophecy cannot be understood until it is history. Then we can fully understand it. So don't get discouraged. Take what you can take and leave the rest for a later study. Learning builds block upon block upon block. So what you learn here, you may find useful in another study sometime. Okay?
Would you consider emailing us or making copies of that to the Muslim American?
Yeah. Okay, I will. I will try to remember to do that. Other questions or comments?
Why do you think it'll be the end of the monarchy?
I think they're going to become a majority Muslim, and the Muslims will not tolerate anybody else ruling. The Muslims are growing very rapidly in Europe and in Britain.
So they'll be ruling then?
They'll be what?
They will be ruling then.
point?
Yes, they will be ruling at that point. It'll be kind of like the, is it the Romanov family in Russia that all of a sudden got executed one night? I think it may be very well be like that.
You were having the percentages you were reading. I'm curious about where you think we are in this country percent-wise.
Let me look at that paper. It is points.
So we can sleep tonight.
Yeah, so you can sleep tonight. Be sure and copy that part, huh? Let me find it again. It is, I think, 0.6%, but I better check. Yes, the United States is 0.6%, so we're a quarter of the way to 2% where they start exercising a really strong effect.
But in Michigan, there are two large Muslim populations in southern, southeast, and southern, southwest Michigan that they, around the Detroit area, that have literally run everyone off.
Okay. There are, of the Muslims who live here in the United States, 49% of them consider themselves Muslims first and Americans second. 19% of them, and there are 7 million here in America, 19% of them think that homicide bombings are acceptable. 31% of young Muslim men, which amounts to 2.5 million, think that homicide bombings are acceptable. So we have 2.5 million young Muslim men in America who believe that homicide bombings are acceptable.
They believe that in their wives, too.
Yes, of course. And by the way, they do recruit and use women. You do begin writing this week. You will now have written homework on Daniel 2, starting in page 38, 39, and 40. You are to study that chapter and to study that one chart that I listed for you. Everybody clear on that? Are you clear on the fact that all the stuff that we will be talking about in here will be happening after we're gone, or a good portion of it will be happening after we are gone. Praise God. Christ comes back for us before the tribulation. Nothing has to happen before the rapture, before we are taken to heaven to be with God. A lot of things have to happen before Christ comes back to earth to reign. And that's what we're going to be talking about in chapters 4 through 19 in Revelation. Be clear on that. You're not going through the tribulation. We are believers. I want everybody to be sure about that. That way you can sleep tonight too. Anything else? Okay. Be sure and check this, and be sure your email addresses are right, particularly if you didn't get any email from us this week.